Thank you so much, Shauna, Paul, and to all of you in the extraordinary five-word challenge. I love the format so much, and it brought me back to the two times I've been able to join in person at the Long Valley, of course. And I look forward to returning again. I want to start out by saying happy International Women's Day to you all. And in honor of International Women's Day, I actually thought I would read a poem by a poet that I think exemplifies the day. A poet whose last collection I always have by my side, which is Evanne Boland from her book, The Historians. And I'm actually would like to read The Historians. I can't help but think I would far prefer, and I'm sure you would far prefer to hear this poem in her extraordinary voice. So forgive me. this is Evanne Boland's The Historians. Say the word history. I see your mother, mine, the light sober, the summer well over, an east wind dandling leaves, rain stirring at the curb. Their hands are full of words. One of them holds your father's journal with its note written on the day you were born. The other, my small rhymed scratchings, my fervent letters. Before the poem ends, they will have burned them all. Now say the word again. Summon our island, a story that needed to be told. The patriots still bleeding in the lithographs when we were born. Those who wrote that story labored to own it. But these are women we loved, record keepers with a different task, to stop memory becoming history, to stop words healing what should not be healed. It is cold, the light is going. They kneel now behind their greenhouses, beneath whichever tree is theirs. The leaves shift down. Each of them puts a match to the paper. Then they put their hands close to the flame. They feel the first bite of the wind. They lace their pages with fire. I finish writing. That is a woman who needs no adjectives, the extraordinary Evanne Boland from her book published posthumously, The Historians. And a dear friend in Sligo sent that to me for Christmas. I really cherish it as I cherish like every poem she's written. Well, so now to my my poems that cannot live up to hers. Okay. I'm gonna read some poems from Boats for Women. Here's the book cover by the extraordinary Siobhan Hudson at Salmon Poetry. Thanks to my editor, who's also Paul's editor and also Lawrence's editor at Salmon, Jesse Landenny. I like to share with people that my book, I wrote it, I finished it in 1998, and so it took 21 years to publication. So I always like to share that with people because if you aspire to write a book, it may be a long time, but keep your dream alive. The themes in it, as Shauna told alluded to a little bit, because of the Titanic disaster, the four words that I use to describe it are silence, disaster, desire, and hope. And there are four sections in the book, and I'll read a couple poems from the first section and give you a taste of each section, and then a couple new poems. This is literally the first poem in the book, and from the first section, called Transatlantic. My hand lifts to ink this page, the way I might slap the face I want to caress, a stiffness that mimics the Earth's global warming spin. I spin, you spin. Oceans divide us into continents of wants. Two wooden doors marked women and men. Who decided that we had to choose which cells to hide behind and enter? Well, the second poem is this first section is pretty much all about maritime disasters. And I'm very grateful, of course, to my connection with Ireland through the Titanic disaster, but also the joy that the ship was built in Belfast. And I know that there's a lot of issues with labor, but nevertheless, that ship created quite a story and quite some history. And I'm grateful that we're able to connect through those stories. I'm doing right now an erasure project of an entire book written about the Titanic called A Night to Remember, which was a book written in 1955, the first book that ever had accounts from survivors in it. There had not been any books except just maybe one or two written about the Titanic. And now there are well over 10,000 books written about the Titanic. So this is that first very significant one. So this is an erasure poem. It's in Boats for Women, but the rest of the book will be its own collection. This poem is called A Night to Remember Your Beautiful Gone. 14 April, 2017. And there were no more. Never again could the world fall apart, off duty, put to sea, outdated, an absurd capacity. This worked out. This meant she had to carry nobody. Even so, this took care of only everybody. The end of class denied anything of investigators. Evidence that hundreds were kept crawling from ladders to escape. They were so hard to find. The statistics suggest casualty, not to mention the chance to be better, but not perfect. Remembered at the gate, may we pass, they asked. No. In fairness, these distinctions set policy, as if from no policy at all, barred the way, but didn't tell anyone. Left to shift, enterprising, no one seemed neither anything, just proud of covering arrival. The thing I like to say about Titanic, of course, I don't like to say it, but there are so many stories depending on the cultural lens that you're seeing the story from. And for the longest time, you know, the American lens is very different than the Irish lens. And the American lens really likes to gloss over class, that really elevates all those robber barons and make them shiny, magnificent people. And yet the stories that are very compelling to me were those distinctions of the classes. And of course, I've been to Cove, where so many people emigrated from, and where 123 people boarded from Titanic's last port of call. Well, I'm going to move to the second section. And the second section of the book is a series of decade poems. I write a poem indicating every decade of my life, and this is 2014. All those years behind tinted windows, on the go, a passport tucked in my back pocket, waiting for reprieve, a passionate traveling, always hurt, head against mine, unfinished prisons, flying fire, worthless, worthwhile dreams. I chose the former, that I was the way I could not stand. The world, now as belly, recovers a woman, a man. I must miracle and finally disrobe. Well, in the third section of the book are a series of poems written in the voice of Bess Houdini, the partner of the famed Harry Houdini, the musician, magician. I do not know that he was a musician, magician. And you can imagine my absolute joy. These poems were written prior to the Titanic poems, the series of Titanic poems I read. And I, you can imagine my joy when I realized, oh, Titanic and Houdini kind of were hanging around in the same swirl of history. So this is a poem that imagines that swirl with some true facts thrown in for good measure. I'll let you decide what's the truth and what's the fiction. This is called Bess Houdini Reveals Her Secret to the Modern World. His cruelest of all tricks, irreversible and no one knew, before all sleights of hand, knots slipping, lock picks under tongues. I remember the taste of metal in my mouth as I bent to kiss him before each death-defying act. How once the pick punctured the wall of my cheek and I bled. Sometimes he got a little out of hand, like the night he performed the water can in Philadelphia during the January freeze. The Bergdahl Brewing Company filled his cell with 8 gallons of lager. He escaped, intoxicated, all boast, betting the locals he could make the Titanic disappear. From his armchair, 3 months later, he read the evening headline to me in his confident drawl, all saved from Titanic after collision, his portrait smiling, handcuffed in tuxedo and leg irons, propped next to him on the mahogany end table. The next day, I slipped out of the house, bought my own morning paper before he woke. The headline still accused the iceberg, the grainy photographs of the lifeboats empty on White Star's piers 58 and 59. I stood on the street corner. I knew the full capacity of what he could take from this world and what he would not give back. So I'm going to share now the final, the title poem to the book, Boats for Women, and then just read a couple newer poems for you. So this is the title poem, Boats for Women. Yes, the boat sank. Yes, it broke into like a stereotypical heart until 70 years later, technology caught up and looked its ancestors in the face. Yes, is the way the years oxidize the steel, and yes, wipes the name Titanic off the bow. Yes, are the lifeboats, the davits, the call for women and children first. Yes, are the men who cry from the decks. Sometimes when I kiss her, I am leaving a yes on her lips to let her know I will go down with this ship. Sometimes when she whispers yes, we are staying on board, but there is always room in the lifeboats for 2 more women. Yes is the fact that if we were alive on that night, we would have lived. Well, if you are a, thank you. If you are a salmon poet, you're a very fortunate poet indeed, because our intrepid editor encourages and sticks with you, and you're asked to produce another book quite a few years later. So this is the title poem to my upcoming collection. It'll probably be 22, but it might be 23 because of the pandemic, where you haven't quite negotiated that yet. I'm good no matter what. I'm grateful to have this connection with the incredible literary community in Ireland as an American poet. It's really, really stimulated me in the most positive ways. So this is the title poem to the new collection called The Glass Studio. I must go back to that photograph of me, 14, on an early morning in my father's makeshift sweatshop, on the unfinished second floor of my grandparents' house, leaning over beige squares arranged in a plaster poured mold, my Red Sox cap cocked backwards like a trigger waiting for release, my left hand steadying the steaming soldering iron while my right pushes coiled snakes of lead into the iron's hot tip to melt them into quick silver seams, fusing those cut squares of glass into translucently beautiful panes if I hold them up to the light breaking through the second floor window. I sweat through this labor. I breathe in the noxious fumes. I wear no protective mask. My hot pink lungs slow burn towards death. Hour after hour, I run my hands over glass like this, iron and lead, like over the seams of women's bodies. It will take years for me to touch. I use the same precision to bring them full circle to when they become translucent. My father teaches me all of this with squares of cut glass, not ever saying the word sex, without ever claiming to transfer the knowledge of how he broke into my mother's body to create something sacred akin to a family. Downstairs, my grandfather returns from hours emptying glasses filled with Kentucky bourbon and ice, brings home his daily ragings like newspaper headlines, and smashes everything on the first floor to tiny bits. I sit up here on a metal stool in the glass studio, mute like a bird who has lost faith in song, soldering everything back into place. At the height of these humid summer afternoons, my father disappears after his initial instructions and before my grandfather returns. He teaches me how not to press the iron against glass squares in the mold for too long. He shows me how the iron-willed iron desires nothing beautiful in its intention to burn. So if left resting on the glass's skin, it will provoke an irrevocable wound. After hours inside of this sweat and burn, heat from the tip of the iron threatening to welt my skin with each beaded line, the fumes filling my lungs like my grandfather's cigarette smoke overtakes the living room where my grandparents sit ruined downstairs. I close up the studio, pressing the sashes down hard and drawing the curtains closed like stitches, turn off my iron, clean the tip in toxic flux until it smokes, whip down the staircase where on the other side of the wall, my grandparents smolder in today's aftermath of broken glass. I pull the door tight to keep them inside, turn the brass doorknob hot in my palm, run next door up the stairs to my bedroom and strip my skin, now a mix of sweat from lead and labor and fear. I pull on my one-piece bathing suit, ride my bike fast and hard away to the beach, lay down on the hot sand next to the beautiful girls on their backs, on their striped towels, tanning themselves into womanhood, their new breasts coming in like delicate blown glass floats adrift from the sea and landing on the creamy skin of the shore, miraculously whole, like art, like the glass-infused light cast from the hanging lamps I assemble through my teenage years in the illegal glass studio of my family's naive making. And I will end with a little bit where I began. I had the unbelievable good fortune to have a poem published in Poetry Ireland Review in December of 2019, which was the last issue that Evan Boland published. And I cannot tell you how honored I was to hear from her and hear that she had accepted a poem that I really felt was going to speak to her. And I don't have that feeling very often, but I had an intuition. And it worked out. And I'm forever grateful. And the poem is about another mentor of mine who passed away, that I had written this in homage to. When I found a notebook from many years before with her words that I stitched together with words of my own to create this poem. And I'll let you know, you'll know when it's her voice and my voice. This is called Gratitude Workshop. And I'd like to dedicate it to all of you. Thank you so much to everyone here, Paul and Shauna, and everyone there in Cork, and all of you listening from wherever you are. And to Lawrence, I can't express enough how honored I am to be reading with you, a person of incredible conscience and integrity and artistry. So thank you. This is Gratitude Workshop, notebook number 12, 1991, for Lucy Brock Broido. She said, poetry is about demons and to trust the interior of ice. I ruminate over all the advice we must endure in this world, a precarious stack of dishes at the edge of the sink, or a game of midnight freeze tag in a field of no moon. She said, don't apologize, don't explain. If 15 fish swim past, what does the 15th look like? The darkest hour of the recurring bruise. She said, court tension and risk. They don't exchange names. They don't even shake greasy hands. About doubt, it's terminal, more than a blessing. Forgiveness is another night of testimony. How is it you remain unmarried? I told myself it was the mattress. I had a bed. I did not lie. I find fire delectable and can sleep. She said, be careful not to be too good. And so I pretend to fidget with some anger in simplicity, the simple. Let the day bear out its breakdown of horoscopes like coins that disappear into the glass face of a parking meter. All description must be revelation. I can forgive only the first gray hair. And in response to my longing, I burn the toast. Thank you again. Be well, everyone. And we'll see you around Zoom.